Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on D-Plex. The content featured in this episode on brand protection in the digital world, with a focus on user-generated content and social media, comes from Luca Grandi.
Have you ever wondered how massive multinational companies keep the internet from just totally hijacking their identity?
Wow, it is a constant invisible battle.
Right, because, I mean, think back to 2016. Burger King essentially hijacked the Brazil Olympics right out from under McDonald's.
Yeah, that is a legendary case study.
And keep in mind, McDonald's had paid, you know, tens of millions of dollars to the International Olympic Committee for exclusive official sponsorship rights.
Right, they had the ironclad physical contract.
Exactly. But Burger King managed to completely dominate the cultural conversation on the ground. And they didn't even use a single official Olympic logo.
Which is brilliant, really. They just threw this massive, highly localized marketing party right outside the gates.
Yeah, they created this undeniable association in the public's mind. And McDonald's was furious. I mean, they actually filed a formal complaint.
I mean, you would be too, right? It just shows how fragile a legacy brand's borders really are today.
So that is the mission of our deep dive today. We are going to decode the invisible, really cutthroat rules of digital brand survival.
Because most of us scrolling through our feeds are, you know, completely oblivious to the intense legal architecture, keeping things from descending into total chaos.
Yeah. We just see the clever billboards and like the viral hashtags.
Right. The perfectly curated influencer posts.
Exactly. So to unpack the actual machinery underneath all that, we are looking at an incredibly insightful lecture by Luca Grandi.
Yes, the senior legal counsel at Ferrero.
Right. He delivered this lecture for a university diploma program on IP business administration. Mm. And honestly, when you get into it,
it doesn't sound like corporate law at all.
No. It reads like a secret tactical playbook for how the internet actually operates.
And the very first thing he establishes in that playbook shatters a pretty massive assumption,
which is that the physical rules apply online.
Exactly. Companies constantly assume the heavy lifting is already done. Like, they think because they have an ironclad physical trademark, they're automatically shielded on the internet.
Yeah, which is not the case. I was actually thinking about this, like a driver's license.
Oh, right. The licensing analogy.
Yeah. Having a physical trademark is basically like having a standard driver's license. It legally clears you to drive a car down the highway.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you can just, you know, wander onto an airport tarmac, hop into a commercial jet, and tell the tower you're cleared for takeoff.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. A physical trademark is the car, and the digital trademark is the airplane.
Exactly. You're in a completely different medium.
Yeah.
So you need completely different clearances.
And that holds up perfectly when you look at how the international trademark system actually functions, which Grandi breaks down.
Right. The international classes.
Yeah. A nice classification system. You can't just rely on an old legacy portfolio. You have to explicitly carve out your digital territory.
So if you make shoes, you're in the physical apparel class.
Exactly. But say you launch a mobile app to track running metrics, you now have to register under class 009.
Oh, wow.
And if you build like a SaaS platform for gym memberships, that's class 042.
So if you don't file those specific class registrations, you're essentially just leaving the door wide open for someone else to use your name.
Oh, totally wide open. And in an environment that is ruthlessly unforgiving. I mean, the internet operates on a strict first come, first served doctrine.
Right, like with social media handles.
Yeah, when a platform spins up, they just give the handle to the first person who hits submit. Top level domains work the same way.
Like .coms or, you know, .fr.
Exactly. If a legacy brand hesitates for even a second, a cyber squatter will happily sit on that digital real estate.
And then just extort the brand later.
Or create massive consumer confusion. Yeah.
Well, and that urgency makes sense. But what really stood out to me in Grandi's lecture was how he connects the speed of the internet to the geography problem.
Yes, the lack of borders.
Right. Because the reaction time demanded is basically zero, the geography issue becomes terrifying. Like, a controversial campaign in New York doesn't stay in New York.
No, it's instantly visible in Tokyo, Berlin, everywhere.
Right. whereas in the physical world, you have breathing room.
Yeah, if a counterfeit store opens down the street, it takes time for them to make the fake goods, get a lease, you know, attract foot traffic.
Your legal team can just casually issue a cease and desist.
Exactly. But online...
That actually leads to something I found genuinely surprising in his lecture. The danger of open databases.
Oh, the stock image trap, yes. What's fascinating here is how innocent it seems.
Right. A marketing team finds a beautiful, royalty-free image on an open database.
Yeah, like a family enjoying breakfast. And they use it for a major ad campaign.
But they don't own exclusivity to that asset.
Exactly. A direct competitor can legally download the exact same image and run a rival campaign.
It's like borrowing a very distinctive tuxedo for a major gala, feeling super confident, and then realizing your biggest rival rented the exact same tuxedo.
Yes.
And worse, the guy being perp-walked on the evening news for embezzlement is also wearing it.
Right. You have zero control over the association at that point.
None. If that stock image ends up on a controversial political blog, your brand is visually tied to that ideology.
And consumers don't understand how open databases work. They just see the image. So Grandy emphasizes that exclusive content is actually a fundamental legal shield.
Okay, so let's say a brand does all this work. They get their classes, secure domains, create exclusive content. The fortress is built.
Right.
But then here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
The fans arrive.
Yeah.
People start interacting.
Ah, yes. User-generated content, UGC.
Yeah. And I want to push back on the corporate fear here on behalf of you listening. Because if a user publicly posts a great photo and explicitly tags a brand...
Why can't the brand just hit share?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why is the legal team having a panic attack? It feels like the most natural, mutually beneficial thing. It's free advertising.
It feels like a victimless, frictionless transaction.
Really?
But Grandy dismantles this by breaking down the actual legal architecture. It's a three-way relationship between the user, the platform, and the brand.
Okay, so unpack that. Who actually owns the rights when I post a photo?
When you create an account, you enter a binding agreement with that specific platform.
Right, the platform's terms.
Yeah, you guarantee you own the IP and you grant the platform permission to host it. But the brand you tagged...
Yeah.
Legally... They are a total stranger to that contract.
Wow. So the tag is literally just metadata. It's not a waiver.
It's just a notification. The user never granted the brand commercial usage rights.
So if a brand just downloads my photo and puts it in their feed...
They are committing copyright infringement. Just because it's public doesn't mean it's public domain.
That completely changes how brands have to view their fans. How do they actually source content without drowning in lawsuits?
Well, the ultimate shield is the terms of use, the to you.
Right.
Grandy points to Disney as the absolute gold standard for this. When you engage with their specific digital hubs, you have to agree to their to you.
And their terms are incredibly aggressive, if I remember the lecture right.
Oh, they leave nothing to chance. If you submit content, you grant them a non-exclusive, irrevocable, royalty-free, worldwide license to use and modify it.
Wait, irrevocable and royalty-free? You're permanently handing over the keys.
You are. But you have to view it from the brand's perspective regarding parallel development.
You mean like the fear of idea theft?
Exactly. Say a fan tweets a sketch of a robot at a movie studio. 3 years later, the studio releases a movie with a similar robot.
Right. The fan immediately thinks, they stole my design, I'm going to sue.
But the studio might have had that robot in pre-production for 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
And proving that in court is a nightmare. So a strong TU preemptively neutralizes that threat. By participating, the user forfeits the right to claim theft of unsolicited ideas.
That is wild. But that's just defensive. What about brands that actively want user content? The lecture mentioned GoPro and Calvin Klein.
Right, proactive UGC management. Instead of randomly scanning the internet and begging for permission retroactively, they engineer the environment.
They define strict campaign rules.
Exactly. They dictate the aesthetic, mandate a unique hashtag, and embed the terms right into the entry process. They manufacture a legally safe pipeline.
That makes a lot of sense. Which transitions us perfectly from organic fan behavior into, well, aggressive corporate behavior.
The minefield.
Yeah, the minefield of hashtags, ambush marketing, and rogue influencers. Because if I'm launching a startup, say, an athletic apparel line, my instinct is to use a dominant competitor's hashtag.
Just to draft off their momentum.
Yeah, it's digital trespassing, sure, but isn't that just smart networking? You might call it smart networking, but IP law calls it actionable infringement.
Really?
Yeah. If we connect this to the bigger picture in Grandy's lecture, major hashtags are heavily protected trademarks.
Like what?
McDonald's hashtag McD stories, Coca-Cola's hashtag smile with a Coke, Nike's hashtag make it count.
But hashtags are designed to be shared. How is using a built-in platform tool illegal?
It depends entirely on intent. If an everyday consumer uses hashtag smile with a Coke with a photo of their lunch, that's fine.
That's the intended use.
Right. But when your startup uses hashtag make count to route Nike's traffic to your unbranded sneakers, you're engaged in free riding. You're siphoning value from a trademark you didn't invest in.
And that concept of free riding is exactly what Burger King did at the Olympics. Ambush marketing is basically free riding on a global scale.
It is. It requires a staggering amount of audacity. You're trying to associate with a massive event without paying the official sponsorship fees.
So how did Burger King get away with it? Because if you use the Olympic rings, you get sued instantly.
Right. They didn't touch the official IP. They weaponized context.
Context.
Yeah. They launched a highly coordinated campaign in Brazil during the exact window of the games using themes of global competition.
Oh, so to the average person on the street.
Exactly. The nuances of official sponsors don't matter to them. They just absorb the hype. Burger King diluted McDonald's investment while technically tiptoeing around direct infringement.
That is so ruthless. But, you know, sometimes the threat doesn't come from a competitor. Sometimes it's an influencer you hired.
Yes. Relinquishing control of your brand image to an individual is inherently dangerous.
The lecture brings up a fascinating case here. Ferrari versus Philip Plane.
A perfect illustration.
So Plane is a fashion designer known for a very edgy, provocative aesthetic. And he owned a Ferrari. So what went wrong?
He started aggressively using his own Ferrari as a prop in his social media posts to sell his footwear. He put his sneakers on the hood, making sure the iconic Ferrari logo was clearly visible. But the imagery often featured scantily clad models in a tone that Ferrari felt contradicted their core values.
Which are, you know, refined luxury and elegance. But I have to push back here. He paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for that physical car.
He did.
If I buy a product, I own it. Why can't I take a picture of my own property?
You own the physical vehicle, yes, but you do not own the trademark or the intangible aura of the Ferrari brand.
Right.
You can take a personal picture, but the legal line is crossed when you use their heavily protected IP to commercially promote your own distinct business.
Oh, I see.
And more importantly, Ferrari argued that Plen's aesthetic was causing tarnishment.
Tarnishment, meaning he was actively degrading the perceived value of their trademark.
Precisely. By associating it with his controversial brand, they sued because he was hijacking their equity for commercial gain while damaging their reputation.
Wow. So brands really have to provide explicit do's and don'ts to influencers.
They have to establish ironclad contractual guardrails. You can't just hand over a product and hope for the best.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focused topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
Okay, so what does this all mean? We're looking at a landscape where competitors ambush you, influencers tarnish you, startups hijack your hashtags.
It's a lot.
Yeah. If I'm a CEO, my instinct is to immediately sue everyone into oblivion, build an army of lawyers.
That's the traditional reflex.
But the lecture says that's a bad move. Why?
Because traditional litigation is totally incompatible with the internet. The court system is incredibly slow, and it's bound by physical geography.
Right.
If you file a lawsuit over a viral video, you'll spend months arguing over jurisdiction. By the time a judge issues a takedown order,
and the video has been viewed 20 million times in Remix.
Exactly. The damage is done, and you spent a fortune achieving nothing.
So if courts are too slow, how do you actually fight back?
You prioritize cooperation over litigation. You have to work directly with the landlords of the internet, the social platforms, the e-commerce giants.
Grandi highlights the Amazon brand registry for this, right?
Yeah. Yes. Amazon realized policing millions of sellers manually was impossible, so they built an algorithmic fortress.
So you just enroll your trademark there.
Right. You don't sue a counterfeiter in federal court. You use Amazon's internal tool. Their algorithm scans for duplicates. You click a button, and the listing is gone almost instantly.
It operates at the speed of the digital market.
Exactly.
But okay, that makes sense for fake watches. But what about memes? If someone is mocking my brand, I want the platform to take it down.
This raises an important question about fair use. Executives have to suppress their egos here.
Because mocking a brand is legally protected speech, right?
Generally, yes. In the US, the fair use doctrine protects satire and parody. But what's fascinating in the lecture is that even in the EU,
which doesn't have that broad fair use rule.
Exactly. Even there, there are explicit statutory exceptions that protect parody. So if you aggressively issue takedowns against a meme, you'll likely lose legally.
And you just look like a corporate bully. But let's escalate it. What if it's not a joke? Mm-hmm. What if a brand is facing hate speech or coordinated fake news?
Right.
My instinct is to get on the corporate account, issue a fiery statement, and fight back in the comments.
And that is exactly what the trolls want.
Wait, really?
Yes. Grandi's advice is definitive. Under no circumstances do you engage directly.
Because engaging trains the algorithm.
Yes. If a verified corporate account argues in the comments, the algorithm just sees massive engagement. It sees heat.
It doesn't read the context. It just pushes the post to a broader audience.
Exactly. You inadvertently amplify their reach tenfold. The correct move is back-channel reporting.
Just quietly flagging it to the platform administrators.
Right, for violating terms of service.
Yeah.
Let the platform quietly remove it without generating any algorithmic heat.
Which perfectly brings us to the ultimate psychological trap. The Streisand effect.
Oh, the ultimate digital paradox. PR departments are terrified of this.
Yeah. So the Streisand effect is when attempting to censor or hide information online paradoxically makes it go massively viral.
Right. Named after Barbara Streisand.
Yeah. She found an obscure photo of her coastal estate in this boring public database of coastline erosion. Nobody cared about it.
Nobody was looking at it.
But the moment she filed a massive lawsuit to suppress it,
suddenly, the media picked up the lawsuit, and millions of people who didn't care about coastal erosion actively sought out the photograph.
Because human psychology is stubborn. We want whatever we're told we can't have.
Exactly. So Granny stresses that before a brand sends a fiery cease and desist over a minor leak, they have to calculate the risk.
They have to ask if the cure is worse than the disease.
Exactly. Does the benefit of scrubbing this minor infringement outweigh the massive exposure it might accidentally generate?
So sometimes doing absolutely nothing is the smartest legal strategy.
Often it is. You just endure the uncomfortable 24 hours and let the news cycle wash it away.
Wow. Okay, so to wrap all this up for you listening, protecting a brand today isn't just about hiring ruthless lawyers.
Not at all. It's about speed, borderless geography, bulletproof terms of use.
Right. Smart platform cooperation. And really, the wisdom to know when not to react.
It's a totally different playbook.
So the next time you see a brand launch a hashtag or carefully ignore a viral parody, you will now see the invisible legal architecture dictating those moves.
You're watching digital survival in real time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which leaves me with one final provocative thought for you to ponder. We know the Streisand effect proves that trying to suppress information only makes it more famous, right?
Right.
So could a brand's most brilliant viral marketing campaign actually be an intentional manufactured mistake?
Oh, wow.
Like a highly anticipated leak that's deliberately posted to look like a suppressed error just to weaponize our own rebellious psychology against us?
That really forces you to question how much of the internet's chaos is just highly choreographed corporate theater.
It really does. Yeah. Maybe sometimes the ultimate defense is just letting the internet think it won.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.